What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Midnight Terrors podcast. My name is Kevin. Here is your weekly Sunday episode. And I'm here with Roy R. Jacob Honeybrook, possibly. He doesn't have R. Jacob Honeybrook in his name in Zoom, so it just says Roy. So maybe it's R. Jacob Honeybrook.
Well, I changed it for the last one and then it changed back. So I said, screw it. Everybody here knows who I am.
Yeah, what the fuck is wrong with us, Roy? We're doing a doubleheader podcast today.
Yeah, and we did two
after
last
recording
night.
Two last night.
Man.
Jeez. Well, we're almost there. But you know what? This last one is a good one. So, Roy, are you excited?
I'm very excited, not only for the movie, but for the guest on this too.
Yes, long awaited. You know, she came in very early on in the podcast's lifespan. You heard her on episode 100. We've been saving this movie pick for her because it's one of the movies she'll actually watch on her own accord. Please welcome back Mama Midnight herself, my mom, also known as Kat.
Hey, thank you, thank you, thank you. And
welcome back.
How do I know it's Roy? Anybody can change their name on Zoom to whatever they want. I could be Roy. We
That's
don't know.
true.
I don't know.
I might be Paul sitting over here.
You got some splaining to do, if that's the case. But we're back. We've already established that real Roy is in his closet somewhere.
Yep, we don't let him out.
First
Causes
rule of
too much
real Roy,
trouble.
don't talk about real Roy.
Nope. This is R. Jacob Honeybrook now.
Welcome back, Mom. This is long awaited for you to do another movie pick. So are you excited to be back?
I am so excited, and I'm really excited because it's this movie. We saw this movie back in Easter?
Yep,
Was it around
Easter
Easter?
2024, yep.
Yeah, and this movie, from the minute they started advertising it, for some reason I was like really jazzed about it. And I don't, Roy, I seriously, I don't like scary movies, but this one, I read the premise and I'm like, Kevin, we gotta go see this. And he's like, are you sure? Who are you? What have you done with my mom?
So
And
Roy,
I
let's
said, it's something that like can be discussed, and it's flown under the radar. I feel it hasn't gotten its due. So I'm excited to tell people how good it was.
So Roy, let's talk about that
No, let's
before we
not.
dive into the movie, because
You don't need to.
Miss I Don't Like Scary Movies over there has appeared on now four episodes of the podcast, including also, if you want to make it five, episode 100, where she listed 10 favorite horror movies. And yet she says, I'm not a scary movie fan. You want to comment on that? Because it's frustrating me. I have nothing left to say. She's just fighting it the whole way.
I understood the assignment. You said I had to have 10. I came up with 15, but still.
Yeah, so overachiever over there. She's fighting it, Roy. Like, what commentary do you have on this person that keeps saying I'm not a horror fan, but wants to be on the show and wants to go see horror movies now without my suggestion?
It sounds like she's seen more horror movies than I have.
This is true.
I am substantially older, so just sheer numbers, yes.
It's okay, Roy. She also hasn't seen The Thing.
Yes, I have. I saw it at a drive-in. Thank you very much.
Oh, well, then she really has seen
there you
more
go.
Horror movies than you.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, that's not hard to do.
The original. The first one.
Oh, from the
When it
50s?
first came out.
From the 80s?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were talking
Roy,
about The
you dug
Thing from...
yourself into a hole there.
Mm-mm.
My Midnight doesn't look a day over 25. I thought it was your older sister when we first started.
Yeah. So just so you all know, the screen is dark. So no, I can be any age I want to be.
Well, we're all about making dreams come true here. But
Yeah.
Yes, the John Carpenter classic from the 80s. I did not realize you had seen that. So again, I rest my case on why you are a horror movie fan, and you can deny it all you want, but everybody else is saying otherwise. So
I said reluctant. I didn't say, how could I be Mama Midnight and your mom and not be a horror fan?
Well, you
I
just
can
put it
be
on air saying,
reluctant,
I don't
though.
like scary movies. Forgive me for thinking that means I'm not a horror fan.
They're two different things.
No.
Back me up, Roy. It's semantics, right?
A horror fan would imply you see like every horror movie and love them. A horror, the other, what else did we say?
Reluctant.
Liking
Reluctant.
horror.
Oh,
I don't like scary
Reluctant,
movies.
yes. That would be you pick and choose.
See, Roy gets me. I like this guy. I like this guy.
Now,
Okay,
my
well,
mom,
don't.
she does not like horror movies. She saw The Exorcist when she was in high school, and that was one and done.
My mom went to see The Exorcist by herself, and she came home and told me it was the funniest movie she'd ever seen in her life.
Funniest?
Yeah, she loved to
My
be
nana
scared.
is literally the embodiment of Michael Keaton's Beetlejuice when he's talking about The Exorcist.
That's a tough lady. That movie
Yeah,
freaks me
she
out.
just she the pea soup scene, she said that was the best thing that had ever been put on film. And
Wow.
obviously she passed her genes on to my children.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, since she wants to fight being an all-around horror fan, let's at least talk about a movie that she is a fan of, because we are finally here talking about 2023 slash 2024's Late Night with the Devil. And yes, she is right, Roy. Getting into our backstory with this movie, I had never heard of this. Easter Sunday was coming up. We kind of have a tradition that on holidays, we usually will end the day by going to see a movie. We did that with Nosferatu on Christmas. We've done that for Thanksgiving, just a tradition that comes up a lot. But I had never even heard of this movie. And she was the one that brought it to my attention, saying, we should go see this. And I'm like, sure, don't know anything about it. So, kind of a blind watch. I don't even know if I saw the trailer. So, kind of the best way to experience the film is just go in not knowing what you're getting. But what did I inform you of this movie? Had you heard of it?
I had really heard about it through social media, which is a testament to how powerful that can be as a marketing tool anymore. But I saw a lot of people posting about this one, and that's when I first heard about it. And then the more I looked into it, this late night talk show with a possessed person and everything about it. I love the Murray Franklin show from the Joker movie, and this just feels like one long episode of that, and it was right up my alley. And having worked in TV and all that stuff, I really knew I wanted to see this one, and when I did, I was pleasantly not surprised, but I really enjoyed it. And I think I saw it around the same time you guys did, spring of last year.
Well, we talk a lot about sleeper hits. When we were going through our favorite movies of 2024, I feel like this one was a was this one of your top three?
It was my favorite.
It was your favorite, yeah. So this was really a sleeper hit, yeah.
Yeah, it really did kind of come out of nowhere.
Yeah, and it's still making its rounds, I think, through people just really word of mouth.
I think people, though, bring when they go in to watch a movie, I think we all bring our own experiences. And, Roy just made a reference to the talk show in The Joker, which you were 100% correct, but I got Johnny Carson vibes. And earlier, Kevin said, now, who was Johnny Carson again? And I realized that that was my parents and my grandparents that ended their day watching Johnny Carson, but his influence is all over this movie. And then also, one of the reasons I think it spooked me so badly is I fell asleep watching TV, as I have a very bad habit of doing. And I woke up to a late night talk show, and on it, there was someone who had hypnotized. I mean, I'm sure they didn't flat out summon a demon, but they had hypnotized someone who was said to be the reincarnation of a celebrity son. And I woke up just in time for the transformation to have already taken place, and this creepy ass voice was just talking. And that's what I woke up to. And I was getting, yeah, I don't think I quickly flipped the channel, and I'm not sure I went back to sleep anytime soon because it was a really creepy voice. I'm like, is this real? Is this, are they really channeling this man's son that was killed? And he was talking, and he's like, they'd ask him a question. He's like, yeah. It was creepy. And so I brought that into the viewing of this movie.
Man, that would be crazy to wake up to something like that.
Yeah, that was network TV too. That was like pre Netflix and all that stuff. So
Man.
well, there you go. So we're obviously going to do our normal format. Roy's going to give us some production notes, but heads up to everybody listening. If you've not seen Late Night with the Devil, we're going to do the plot walkthrough. Don't let us spoil it for you. Go watch it first. It is absolutely worth your time. Just to sell you on that, I'll give you a basic plot setup, which is we are following the show Night Owls. Hosted by Jack, who is played by David Desmolchian, and it's a Halloween night show. He's trying to save his ratings, so he brings on essentially, a series of paranormal events that may just imply that the devil is the guest of honor on the talk show. So that's the most basic of setups, but seriously, go watch it. Don't let us spoil it for you. It is best to go in not knowing where it's going to go. So Roy, what can you tell us production note-wise for Late Night with the Devil?
All right. So the guys who created this, what they wanted to do is they used to watch the late night talk shows in the 70s and 80s, and they considered that to be something dangerous. And being kids in that time, they said it was like this strange window into an adult world. And I thought that was really cool because I remember watching David Letterman with my mom, and I kind of had that same feeling as well. And they pulled that off. And they pulled that off by making it look like a 70s talk show, because they actually used equipment from back then, like the studio cameras and stuff. Anything they could find from that era, they used so that it would really feel authentic to the time period.
Well, we were talking about that off air. I just gave this a rewatch last night slash this morning, and that's one of the best things about the movie is the grainy film quality. Really makes it feel like it came out of the 70s. And Mama Midnight and I were also talking about how the art of the talk show might still be around, but I don't think it's nearly as much of a cultural touchstone as it used to be.
Not at all.
They even used a 70s color scheme, and anybody that ever walked into my mother's house knew that everything was earth tones. There was the orange and the gold and the avocado appliances and all of that stuff. But they
Brown.
even, yeah, brown. Everything was earth tones. That was the 70s, Everybody made their own baby food. It was earth tones. It was natural. And they used that color scheme on the talk show set as well. And for someone who was actually around and watching television during those years, although, I wasn't watching a lot of the late night stuff, it felt very authentic to the 70s. They did their research.
It reminded me a bit of the set of Match Game. All right, next production note is there was controversy leading up to this film's release because there were some AI images that they had used in a montage. I think there were two or three, and a couple critics called for a boycott of the film. But the guys who created it, if you can't tell, I'm trying not to say their names because I don't know how to pronounce them. They said that they only used a couple images and they put heavy editing on. And just seeing the success of this film, it didn't seem like too many people cared about that.
What were the images? Did they
I couldn't
say?
really f No, I couldn't really find that. I'm thinking it was probably in the opening scenes where they're going through the 70s and the timeline of the talk show. My guess is that they're somewhere in there, but I couldn't tell.
The criticism was that they used AI in the film.
Yeah, two AI images.
I wonder if that had something to do with the strike, because this did get a release in 2023, like really early 2023, though, way before the strike.
Yeah, I think people were just unhappy, because there's that thing that if you use an AI image, it takes art that's already created, and some people say it's similar to stealing.
Well, I
Yeah.
felt that the montage at the beginning really set, and I told Kevin this in the theater, really set the stage for me and put me back in the 70s. So I thought it was fairly authentic as something that we actually saw. I mean, you turned on the TV and the Vietnam War was on TV when you got home. So I think Colin and Cameron, and I'm gonna say Cairns or Carnes. They're
I'll go with that.
Aussies. Yeah.
I was
So
gonna
hope we
say
didn't butcher it, guys,
Carinaise.
because you did good work on this. Definitely.
So this is a pretty cool one. The film was released as a glow-in-the-dark VHS in October of 2024.
Oh, hell yes.
That would be a cool piece of
Wow.
physical media to have.
I would have purchased that in a heartbeat.
All right, and getting on to the numbers, let's talk about the box office. So, this movie had a roughly $2 million budget. It made 15.5 million. It's pretty interesting. The third day it was out, it had totaled 666,666 dollars.
Well, that's lovely.
Right?
Wow.
And if you're wondering about the critical reception, it has a 7 out of 10 on IMDb, a 72% on Metacritic, and Rotten Tomatoes coming out on top with 97%
That is very
approval rating on there.
difficult to do.
Yeah, it's
That's
weird that
pretty
Rotten
good.
Tomatoes is that high and everything else is around 7 out of 10.
Was that it for production notes, Roy?
That's all she wrote.
All right. Well, we're gonna do our plot walkthrough. There's a lot to dive into. We're again, part of the reasons I'm excited to have my mom on here is, she's done it a little bit so far, but she can definitely speak more to the period of the 70s that this is taking place in. So I'm excited to have that perspective on here. Because immediately walking through the movie, it is a 70s period piece, which for me back in the day with getting into horror, like I used to kind of turn my nose up at 70s horror. I thought it was slow and boring and, just not for me. And now I adore the 70s with horror because I feel like those filmmakers had the most to say.
Yeah, there was something with that too. I heard it once that a lot of guys in the 70s and 80s, why those movies stand out so much is because many of the people who worked on the film, they had been in Vietnam, they had been partying at the Hollywood Hills nightclubs and all this crazy stuff and lived these wild lives. And as the years went on, it's kind of like, oh, I was this producer's kid. Now I'm working on movies. Nobody comes from these insane backgrounds anymore. It's all just very cut and dry.
And we also finally have a starring role vehicle for the one and only David Desmulchian. This guy has been grinding as an actor for years. I think the first thing I saw him in was 2008's The Dark Knight, where he was like a Joker henchman, but then he's gone on to do, a ton of horror stuff and comic book stuff. He's done The Suicide Squad, Ant-Man. But he's also in Last Voyage of the Demeter. He's in Stephen King's The Boogeyman. And he's always just been a fantastic actor. So I was really excited to see that he was finally getting a starring role in a movie that was really so heavily reliant on his performance. And he is fantastic in this movie.
I love what he did with the character. When you're reading and when you're watching a movie, you always want to see the character grow. He does, but in the opposite direction. He just devolves, just completely goes downhill in the most spectacular way. And I loved it. I love the way he changed throughout.
Yeah, and they slowly unveil stuff about his backstory as well, because they give it to you kind of, in a brief overview at the beginning. They do this montage, which I absolutely love, where they talk about, his rise to fame and then, the loss of his wife and how his show was failing. So the build up to this Halloween talk show is like a last ditch effort to save the show Night Owls.
Yeah, it's very much a story of this guy's downfall, if anything.
And we're gonna kind of see, I talked about this earlier. Roy, the Johnny Ringo songs from Crown the Empire?
Oh, yeah.
And just that old like tale. This is essentially a 70s take on the Johnny Ringo story of someone coming into contact with the devil and not getting quite what they bargained for. which is a really cool take on it, which we'll talk about as we, go on. But they lay the seeds early on for Jack's reasoning for these events unfolding. But it's pretty heartbreaking. They give you a lot of reasons to root for him in the beginning.
Yeah, and I never really stopped either. I mean, well, he did kind of sacrifice his wife, but
Oh, there's that little thing.
well, I mean,
Yeah.
sacrifices must be made for fame.
Right? Be careful what you wish for, I think, is the overall theme. But as a woman, I started out really liking this character. As the movie went on, I started picking up on things and thinking, oh, he's not really the red flags weren't there at the beginning, and then they sort of showed up as a like a pink, and then it by the end it was red, and then at the very end you see the reality. So I really liked him at the beginning, and by the end I hated him, which means the actor did his job.
And the writing was there too. And let's talk about the backdrop that is carried throughout this movie and this story is this is 1977, and they tell you straight up in the montage, they're relying heavily on the period of the Satanic Panic. Where there's extreme paranoia going on. Mama Midnight and I kind of had a conversation off air about like really where it stems from, because it really took hold in the 80s, but late 70s it's starting to rear its ugly head. Mom, can you speak to what that environment was like in the late 70s, early 80s when Satanic Panic was taking hold?
My personal opinion, and I've been thinking about it since this morning, my personal opinion is that a lot of it was rooted in the movies that had come out, where people were very, very afraid of the devil based on the movie The Exorcist started a whole thing. They started a whole culture of movies like that, but it also scared people so much that they were thinking about this stuff. And I grew up in a Catholic household, and so I wasn't allowed to listen to watch certain movies or to listen to certain music. Led Zeppelin was banned in my house. At one point, and I'm a huge Beatles fan and everybody knows it, but at one point, my mom was not, she didn't want me listening to the Beatles because of the backward masking and the possible influence. Which is funny because, I can't listen to Led Zeppelin, but mom's eating popcorn watching The Exorcist, But I feel like it started with the movie's influence and other movies around that time, and I feel like the 70s was sort of a be free to express yourself type of thing. And then when you and a lot of experimental psychological things, because this movie is actually based on a real book and real air quote research that had been done. And that's where they got the premise for this movie. But then you hit the 80s and you had the McMartin preschool scandal, and it was sort of a witch hunt. And so when you have an idea in front of you, then you start using that as a frame of reference for you view everything through that lens. So a child has memories and it pertains to the preschool and its abuse. And it just sort of evolved, I think. But a lot of it stemmed from The Exorcist, in my opinion.
Well, I'm wondering too with the cult aspect if some of that was spurred on by the Manson family and those
Very
murders.
much so. Very much
Well,
so.
we talked about this too, Roy, off air. I was kind of trying to Google, like, again, where did the Satanic Panic like start? And Google kind of contributes it to a lot of different factors. But one thing that popped out at me was conservative values and like traditions were being challenged, by the time the 70s and the 80s were rolling around. And so because we've got this frame of reference with things like The Exorcist, Amityville Horror, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and all these, quintessential 70s films. People look to these new things that are coming about and they just go, that's evil. That's satanic. Because it's not what they're used to.
Well, look at what Mama Midnight was saying too about the music. You had bands like Black Sabbath coming out around that time, and rock and roll was never really a thing like that until the late 60s, early 70s, and that all gave way to heavy metal, which was like a prime target to be thrown into that camp as well. I remember seeing people burning albums of Iron Maiden's Number of the Beast. It's like, it's not even satanic, it's a story.
But he had those upside, Ozzy had the upside down
Right.
crosses and it all, but this even goes on now. You've got certain metal bands out there. Some of them are, Kevin's particular favorites that really have that reputation as being satanic. And so you've still kind of got that thing, but I agree with you on the Manson family. They very much had those overtones. Jimmy Page was supposedly a part of that church. And so it all just sort of fed into, and every you when things go wrong, you do need somebody to blame. 70s was a lot about protesting the establishment. And I think the devil is as good as anything to pin blame on and explain a lot of bad things as well.
Yeah, and I think too what you're saying about the traditional values being challenged. I mean, after World War II, the entire world changed, and the people who were in charge then grew up in like the 20s and the 30s. And imagine growing up then and seeing what the kids were doing in the 70s. It's two different worlds. So of course you're gonna be like, oh my God, like what is Led Zeppelin? This isn't, Louis Armstrong on the trumpet. This isn't music, and put labels on everything. So I mean, that makes sense about just the norms and values totally shifting in that from the 60s especially into the 70s.
Well, then look at what followed the 70s, where the 80s was like an extravaganza of that, like
Cocaine.
clothing was otherworldly, like drug use was heavy, partying, neon lighting for everything. Gratuitous films, like in the slasher genre where the MPAA is having to, massacre the film to even get it released, So what are people going to do other than say, this is not cool, this is evil?
I'm sorry, but the 80s were fun. I mean, it was it there's a certain app out there that one of the questions for you to put on your profile is, what do you miss most about the 80s? Well, the big hair, the fun fashion, the music, the dancing, but it was an overall let's have fun. The 70s were so serious, and like I said, everything was earthy, and then the 80s was just like, let's get as plastic and as weird as we can, and it was a party. Well,
Well,
we've
especially
got
going back to the movies as well, I believe in the 40s and 50s, I think it was called the Hague Code, where they had to follow all these guidelines. The movies had to follow this American value, Christian moral code, or else they wouldn't be made. That's why in the 50s you had like these singing cowboys on screen that wouldn't hurt a fly. And then in the 70s you see the spaghetti westerns where people are just getting blown away because they did away with that code, and that just opened the floodgates for all kinds of different cinema to now be created, or at least shown on a main scale. That's why noir movies were always so underground, because they didn't have that approval. They were showing criminals and stuff like that, and that wasn't morally correct in the 40s and 50s.
Well, I think that ties back into our main character here of Jack Delroy, David Desmalchian's character. He's kind of gonna, exploit that for his ratings. He's gonna do a special Halloween edition of Night Owls, and he's gonna bring on a psychic medium. He's gonna bring on a skeptic. He's gonna bring on a woman who actually has written a book and, cares for someone who is supposedly possessed.
Right,
He's
and
really trying to lean into the climate, which is why I think it's important that they establish that, because you like nowadays you'd probably be like, why the fuck would anybody want to watch this? Like if I turned on a talk show and they're like, we're going to show you an exorcism, nope. But that's just what was in at the time, and people, couldn't look away.
Well, I think it was funny too that, well, not funny, but it was cool to see how he started out as a legitimate talk show trying to rival Johnny Carson. And then when that doesn't work, he just goes the total Jerry Springer, Mari Povich route and bringing on these crazy people, and they're yelling and screaming at each other, doing anything he can to get those ratings. So you really see where this show is at and where he's at as a host by the time we get to the point where he's like, well, fuck it, let's bring on the devil.
Yeah. Well, I realized rewatching this that Roy, I know you haven't seen these and Mama Midnight hasn't seen them either, but she has met the director alongside me, someone who's been on the show, Chris LaMartina, the originator of the WNUF Halloween movies.
Oh yeah, you and Zach were
Similar
talking about
concept
this.
here, with it being like broadcast. The difference with those is that it's like VHS recordings with like a bunch of commercials and stuff. More comedic take, but I don't know. This is all of like those movies and this one have a really cool take on the seriously overdone found footage medium.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that when you do it right, it's really cool. This Blair Witch, but I know I've probably said this before. I went through a phase where it's like every movie I clicked on was a found footage movie, and 90% of them were just not worth watching. So to see this movie combine the medium of broadcast combined with the found footage, analog horror is a good way to put it. You know, a lot of those deal with these old TV shows that are supposedly lost, and how they combine that with the found footage stuff between the commercial breaks. Really, it's really cool. I like what they did with this the whole way around. And they said it in black and white too, so you know it's not part of the show. It's a nice
I
touch.
didn't even realize it was a found footage film
Oh, really?
until rewatching it this morning, and I
Hmm.
thought, oh, this is a found footage thing, but it wasn't done along the veins of Blair Witch Project at all.
Nope.
They used it very effectively, so it didn't jump out on me that, oh, this is one of those. I thought it was a very effective use.
Yeah, no shaky cam, no handheld
No.
cameras,
It's
which I gotta say,
almost
Roy, this is quite the experience to watch in a theater where it's very dark and you really can't be focused on anything else.
would be cool. Yeah, it's almost like a lost media horror if you've ever looked up anything on that on the internet. It's like supposedly lost episodes of TV shows that were like designed to be really violent or out there. And
Well,
oh, if you're
this is not
wondering,
I Love Lucy's lost episodes at all, though.
I love Lucy.
I
I
do
love
too.
Lucy. I used to watch all those old shows on Nick at Night back in the day. I Love Lucy. All in the Family. Oh my God, I loved all that stuff.
Yeah, we had some good stuff before you youngsters came
Yeah,
along.
The Jeffersons. Oh, that show is hilarious. Mr. Jefferson is so cool. I wish I could be him.
Well,
Wheezy.
now that you brought that up, Mr. Spacely would call and they'd have video conferencing.
Yeah, that's
And when you
right.
realize that we're sitting here on Zoom daily, we are living the Jetsons, but there is no Rosie the Robot cleaning up my apartment. I'm a little disappointed about that, I gotta say.
I could definitely use one. I haven't cleaned my bathroom in like weeks, and it's getting pretty grody in there.
Lovely.
There's a smell to it.
Jeez.
Oh, if you're wondering what I did in television, I was the douchebag producer egging people on.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I was the producer of a morning show.
Oh, that's way
Not
cool.
late night, but
I would like
yeah.
to believe that you were more like Gus.
No.
Oh, poor Gus.
No, I was like, get
No.
out there and say your damn lines and quit arguing with me. Oh man, we
You
would
know what?
have
You didn't want to do
screaming
the like
matches.
shitty puns that Gus has to do alongside
Right.
Jack. Well,
No, it was more like either me screaming at the director, screaming at the reporter, screaming at the anchors. Nobody had a good time.
Gus is there to hold the place of Johnny Carson's co-host Ed McMahon.
You are correct, sir.
Right? And just his yes man and whatever. But the thing is that Jack Delroy isn't even as nice as Johnny Carson. I mean, he does everything at poor Gus's expense. And, Gus just keeps he you know he resents it, but he just sort of takes it because he needs the job. And also, he's the in a lot of movies about the devil, the Catholic Church is sort of cast as the opposite side. And in the very beginning, Gus says, "Jesus, Mary, and Joseph," which is a Catholic, you know, kind of like a WTF version. And then also at they call him, you know, a Mick, so he was Irish Catholic, and then he's sort of the moral compass, is like, don't do this, we don't need to do this, cut it off. And Jack's chasing those ratings and he doesn't care. You know, some people on their way up the ladder, they don't care who they step on, and he was stepping on the psychologist, he was stepping on, he used people, he used Gus. But Gus was like the moral, I felt bad for him. I really did. And also, I don't like worms.
Yeah,
Yeah,
Gus got
either.
it bad.
Well, we'll talk about that. But like the movies, you know, got a setup once we get to the talk show. The movie really gets going when we are introduced to Christu, the psychic medium, who brings a lot of humor. I forgot how like funny this movie was, where he was playing off of like the audience member where he can't get the name of the wife right. And he's like, "Oh, your wife is here with us." And he goes, "Well, that's strange because she ran off with another guy." You know, just like the I forgot how much humor there is. And Gus and Jack have really funny interplay that's so corny, but like again is so entertaining.
Well, let's go back real quick because this is taking place during sweeps, and I don't know if you guys are familiar with that term.
Yep.
Yes,
The
it's sw
Nielsen. The
yeah.
Nielsen diary, or what the viewing diary where people
So
recorded what shows they watched. And
yeah, so Sweeps Week is like this big deal where you have to put on your best of the best performances. And when we would do our shows, we would have these special like news packages and just segments to try to make ourselves stand out because that's really what the advertisers and the sponsors look at when they're deciding whether or not to keep dealing with you is the sweeps numbers. So to see that worked in here and to know the pressure that TV stations are under, it really made a lot of sense that especially during this time, he's trying whatever he can to get a good number on this show.
oh yeah, for sure.
Am I boring you?
You guys, you and Zach made me pull a late night last night. I pulled late night with a couple devils as well.
Yeah, right.
But so question for y'all. When I revisited this, I remember thinking this in the theater and it came right back to me. We see a lot of audience members. Again, this is a Halloween movie, so it's definitely getting added to my Halloween watch list. We see a lot of people in costumes. Did you also think that that skeleton was going to play into it?
Yes.
I absolutely did, and then I figured it was misdirection. But when you watch till the end, it was not misdirection, and there was a crucial, that skeleton was a crucial part of it, and that's why he wasn't talking.
Yeah, because they zoom in on him a lot, and he never takes his mask off. He never speaks. Really sits very still. I
But
thought
he
for a second they
serves a
were gonna,
big purpose.
yeah, I thought for a second they were gonna be like the devil's under the costume.
I
I'm
did
like,
too.
don't do that. That'd be bad.
What does
I
the
did
skeleton
too.
do? I don't remember ever seeing him after the zoom-ins.
When we at the very end he shows up again, and that's and there's a crucial statement made. I don't want to spoil it yet because we're not there, but he shows up again, and that was my aha, smack my forehead moment.
I
I
must
did
have
notice
blacked
him
out both
today, but
times I watched this.
I did notice him today at the end, but I couldn't tell what his purpose was, so we'll get there.
Okay.
But the
I'm on the
first
edge of my
real,
seat now.
yeah, maybe slide back so you don't fall off.
I'll try. If I slide too far, I fall off this thing.
the first real scare comes with Christu, who's been kind of, you know, stumbling around, not really getting things right, but he has a tender moment with like a woman and her daughter. Which I think they later reveal was you know, staged, because the skeptic is like, "You guys filled out a questionnaire, right?" And they go, "Yeah, we did." But then he has a real scare where something very, very powerful enters the studio and he starts freaking out. And again, there's no like music to tell you to be scared. This is just this guy being overwhelmed, and then the lights blow up.
Yeah, I jumped.
And it starts off with little things like, just the actor's performance. He's screaming, his eyes are rolling over. Later on, he's got like a nosebleed. And then, lights flash off and they're like, we're going to cut to commercial. And everybody on set just thinks it's a practical joke. I think he had a nosebleed. I know someone else does later, but I can't remember if he did. I thought I saw like him having a nosebleed when he was coming down from the event.
He
Well, he
did because they
starts
try to put
sweating.
makeup on him.
Okay, that's right.
Remember, he was sweating profusely and he didn't want anybody touching him. And they kind of set it up like he's almost having a heart attack. They lead you in that direction.
Yeah, it's very practical. And then we meet Carmichael, the skeptic, who is also like a former magician who just has everything in his mind about why he believes all this stuff is fake.
Okay, Johnny Carson reference right there. He had a running bit on the show where he played Carmack and he wore a turban and he was a magician of sorts. So I pulled that in, even though Carmichael was actually based on a real person. But did anybody else get Orson Welles vibes off of that character? I
I could see
saw it
that.
mentioned elsewhere, but that was already in my head. Broyd, did you?
No, I don't know that much about
No.
Orson Welles.
Okay. I just the character. If you've ever watched Beetlejuice, Othello, that character is kind of like an Orson Welles type.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who?
Who's the
Otho?
Othello. Sorry, went Shakespeare on y'all for a minute. I have a lot of irons in the fire here.
I feel you.
So you know what scene I completely forgot about that I know really grossed me out when I had a handful of popcorn in the movie theater next to my mom is when Christu vomits on the skeptic.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, someone's going to pay for this dry cleaning.
That
I love how
was.
smug the skeptic is.
Yeah.
He's such an asshole.
Oh, yeah.
But that was an Exorcist reference there, too, with the vomit. It
That's
just ends up
true,
being
yeah.
green this time.
Yeah, there's a lot of horror nods in here. Jack even mentions Vincent Price at one point.
Yep.
But there's some truth being revealed because Christu goes down and he's got to go, to the hospital. But he had a random moment earlier on in his overwhelming sense where he stumbled across the nickname of Jack's deceased wife.
Yeah, Minnie.
And he talks about a unmarried man wearing a wedding ring, and Jack reveals on air that, oh, that's me. But Jack is really playing into it. Like he's really going for this. And initially you think like, oh, he's actually on the ride. Later on, you're going to find out that he's just doing it for ratings, but
Well,
Like this guy.
at the beginning he used his wife's that her dying interview. She died 2 weeks and he used it and to rocket up in the ratings as well. So he's not above using Minnie, which was supposed to be the secret nickname that he had for his wife that he whispered on that interview, I love you, Minnie. He's not above using her for ratings, and you can see that he starts thinking. But then he also, I think he was a little bit shocked that this could be her reaching out to him as well.
I
But
like
he's not
to.
above using her for ratings.
No.
I like too how they model the Grove and everything after real life conspiracies like
Yes.
Bohemian Grove and
Yes.
the sacrifices, the human sacrifices celebrities supposedly make. Like
Yeah.
whenever somebody gets really famous, somebody in their family mysteriously dies. So I like how that all played into it from the real world.
Yep, the tall trees.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the redwoods?
Have I ever like been
Boy,
out there?
yeah.
No.
So I grew up in California and we did take family trips up north. The redwoods are absolutely majestic and almost otherworldly
Wow.
in themselves. So, but the Bohemian Grove, I mean, that's been like a cultural reference, a cult reference for, they're out there making deals with the devil, and that's why they're successful. And even the skeptic is like, come on, I know you were part of it. Can you introduce me? I want to be successful too. Like he's goading Jack into revealing that he's actually part of it and he wants to be successful too.
Yeah, that's another seed being planted there about Jack's history and what he might have done.
I just try to show up at the crossroads at midnight. Hasn't worked yet.
So where this movie really steps it up is we get the backstory of this satanic cult worshiping a certain demon, and they have, footage with an interview of the head of this like suburban home satanic church, which leads to, them doing sacrifices there. And there's a mass suicide that's covered on there after like a 3-day standoff. And they rescue Lily, the young girl. When she, this is my favorite scene in the movie, is when her and her caretaker June are brought onto the show. And we start to meet Lily, who is supposedly possessed by this demon, which I believe she calls Mr. Wriggles.
Yes.
So again, kind of an Exorcist vibe there too, with the Captain Howdy thing. But Lily comes out and she's talking in the pronoun us. The camera like flickers when she walks into frame and she never stops staring at the camera. This is when the movie just dials it up, is when Lily's introduced.
And
She's creepy.
at the same time too, she's still acting like a little girl though. Like she comes out and does like the curtsy thing, and she's calling him Mr. whatever his last name is. And I thought it was so well done that she could be innocent and unsettling at the same time, and that was so much more effective than just having a possessed person walk out there.
Yep. And it's right around this time that it's revealed backstage because this is also cool. We cut away from the show and we go to the backstage segments where the producers are trying to figure out the technical difficulties with the lights and they all think they're playing jokes. But it's revealed here that Christu, the medium, died on his way to the hospital. So Jack, this is where he starts to show the cracks of no one can know about this. And he tells, I believe Gus later on, like, I'm trying to save our fucking show. But things are amping up, and this is where I think that this is the best scene in the movie, is the summoning of Mr. Wriggles, where they literally do a séance live on television.
Yeah, how good does the possession look in this too, with the face that's scarred up and the eyes? It's like, and the voice too, man.
Ooh, I remember my mom and I were sitting in the theater when her face was revealed underneath her hair and the makeup comes into play. We literally both jumped.
It was a terrifying scene. I don't think I have felt that type of terror from a movie since The Exorcist. That
Man.
sheer, that's the scene where it really started to get me. And I'm pretty sure that I was grabbing on to Kevin and popcorn was flying every time I jumped. But that was a very high level of scare for me when that started. And the way they melted her little girl voice with the demon voice and it was just, man, that got me bad.
Yep. And this is where it's revealed that Jack has met this demon before because possessed Lily turns over and says, "It's nice to see you again, Jack."
Yeah, we met in the tall trees.
Yep, the Redwoods.
I love this form of storytelling where it's never just a data dump. It's always each scene gives you a new piece of information.
Here's one thing I was wondering. I was going to save it till the end, but I'll ask now because around this time I was wondering this. Is Lily also possessed by his dead wife? Is the demon impersonating the dead wife? Is his dead wife a separate haunting? Like, what do you guys make of that? Because there's clearly a demon, there's cl clearly his wife. So.
I always kind of took it that the wife was never really there, because
That it
like
was.
in most like possession films, you know, like The Conjuring describes demons as like manipulators. So I always felt like the wife was never really there. I think that the
Man.
demon was showing manifestations of the wife to try to get under Jack's skin a little bit.
I like that. And it adds
We
up.
as the audience, though, we see Minnie. We see her in the shot standing behind him. Jack doesn't realize that she's there, but this is his guilt. This is his punishment. This is the demon taunting him, but he doesn't know that Minnie's there. It's just bringing up really, really hard stuff, really uncomfortable. They're bringing up his secret, is what they're doing. But it wasn't until he's like, play that footage back, that he sees Minnie in the background.
Yeah, and the way she speaks to Jack too, at points it sounds like his wife, because
Right.
whenever he's backstage at one point, he's like, that voice that came out of her, that was Minnie's voice. And yeah, it's I think I agree with the fact that it's the demon trying to trick him into thinking his wife is a part of all this.
Yeah. And his producer friend is there on set saying like, "Ah, don't you go down this rabbit hole. Keep it together, man."
We got a show to run.
We've got the vice president here in the
Oh
audience
yeah, and his
of the
wife.
company or whatever it was.
That guy has a great line later on where he's like, "Oh, you know, I got the president on the line or whoever I'm talking to, and he thinks that this is the best thing to sweep television in years, and who am I to disagree?" But so then we get, this is where I feel like the movie could fall apart, is when in between the possession scenes, like if the dialogue wasn't interesting, it wouldn't work. But Carmichael going back and forth with June, who is Lily's caretaker, about how he believes that everything was staged, and he's a former magician as well. So his whole plight of trying to disprove what they saw during the seance, you know, when Lily levitates. And her face changes and her nose bleeds and like her voice is changing, that she knows Jack's wife's, you know, like backstory. You're still on the edge of your seat with this whole like hypnosis subplot that could easily detract from the movie, but it really doesn't.
Yeah, and I like too. I think on the first time I was watching this, I think I still had a seed of doubt that maybe this is all a clever ruse. Maybe Carmichael will be correct. So that was really well done that they could keep me guessing a little bit like that, even though I was pretty sure some demon was going to pop out.
I feel like Carmichael really drives the movie at this point. Him antagonizing Dr. June really is challenging that demon to prove that it's real. Because he sits there with his arms crossed and he's like explaining away everything and basically taking credit away from the demon, who I think comes on a little stronger because it wants to show that no, these can't, I can't be explained away. This is me. I am powerful. Look at what I can do. And I'm real. And it just sort of, you know, throwing down the gauntlet, say, yeah, you're not real. Okay, watch this.
Right. And then I'll blow the lights up.
Right.
Well,
Well,
I
I mean,
thought
I.
something cool too. I read this when I first saw the movie, and I was looking this time, but I couldn't really catch it. Apparently, you can see his wife's ghost in a couple shots throughout this movie before we see her in the freeze frame, almost like they do in Haunting of Hill House with the
I was gonna
ghosts.
say that's some Mike Flanagan shit right there.
Right. I'm pretty sure that's what I heard, but I couldn't. I was looking, I didn't see it this time, but apparently she's in a couple frames before she's revealed.
Well, I also these conversations on the talk show, Skeptics versus the, you know, the Believers, gave me a lot of nods to Ed and Lorraine Warren and their whole story.
They're mentioned too.
Yeah. And how like there were always, you know, skeptics of them, and like they would go, you know, onto shows or talk shows or whatever to like state their views, and there was always somebody there trying to disprove it. And again, that could easily detract from the movie because it's almost like a subplot, but it does not. And boy, does it give us a disgusting moment here,
Ew.
where Carmichael hypnotizes Gus into like believing that there's worms inside of him. Yeah, he rips open his stomach and his head, and there's worms inside of him.
Hate when that happens.
Ain't that the way it goes, man?
Well, some days you get home from a hard day's work and worms just blow out of your body.
I also realized just how, even watching this at home, when they do little camera things like close up on the hypnosis ring, I realized just how immersive this movie is. Like, it really feels like a talk show. The way it's framed and shot, it doesn't look like a found footage thing. It really looks like a talk show that's taking up the full screen.
The way it's formatted as well. It starts with the intro song, it goes into his monologue, then they bring the guest out. It's all formatted like a talk show would be too.
I've personally felt that they were gaslighting us after that scene, though. I started thinking, am I crazy? Did I just see the worms thing?
Yeah, this movie, I feel like if they did that psychological element of like this was all in Jack's head or something, it really I don't think would work.
Yeah.
Right.
Did you guys look away from the watch when it turned into
I
that
was
spiral?
just gonna bring that up.
I have not. I've seen it twice, and every time, like, I'm not looking at that
I
thing.
did that in
Yep,
the theater. I did that today because I thought, I'm getting sucked into this movie, and I'm sure it's fine. Just in case, I'm gonna look away because,
Yep.
again, it was the 70s. People were trying new things, and I actually saw my mom get hypnotized,
What?
and it was creepy. And I
Ah.
hadn't remembered that until I saw this movie, and then I forgot about it because it's been almost a year. And then I remembered it this morning, and I'm like, I am not looking at that. I know people can be hypnotized. I don't want to be walking around clucking like a chicken for the rest of the day or whatever. So I refuse to look at that hypnotized thing, the watch. I'm glad I'm not the only one because I wasn't going to confess that. I thought, man, you're pretty
I
hot
remember
at
being stressed out in the theater, being like, should I look at this? And I remember vaguely turning away so like it wasn't a constant staring at the hypnotizing. Today I did not, so I might have been hypnotized to do
Oh
like the
boy.
podcast today.
Well, it
Are
turns
you
out the
clucking
real
like a
Kevin's
chicken?
going.
I'm clucking like something.
No, I don't mess with that stuff in movies. When they pull that out, I'm like, I don't know what
Nope.
kind of
Yeah.
stuff the filmmaker's trying to pull here, but he's not going to get me.
Well, I mean,
I have
it's right
plenty of other
around.
stuff taking my soul.
Yeah, you're writing.
What you
But
got?
it's right around here that we have the playback of Minnie's ghost appearing. Again, at this point, Jack is very adamant about like just keep the shit going because June doesn't want to communicate with Mr. Riggles anymore because Lily says, "Oh, if Mr. Carmichael thinks we're playing a trick, why don't we show him?" Jack's like, "No, this is great. Just keep it going." And you're at this point, you're already like teetering on like, okay, this is just a very insensitive guy. But they're gonna drill the nail in the coffin later to really make him a terrible person.
This is where I started to hate him, Kevin. This is where I started to hate him because as a woman, when I knew that they were having an affair,
Oh, yeah.
that's when, and I was like grieving husband my ass,
Oh, see, I never
and
got that.
I was all pissed at him after that.
I never got that. I thought the demon was just making fun of him for like flirting with her.
No,
Oh
backstage they were standing way too
no.
close and he was manipulating her and she's used to doing what he says. And the demon had already said she thinks you're so handsome anyway, but it was obvious. Oh, I got so mad at him right then and there. I'm like, you
Yeah,
asshole, at
that's
the screen, at
interesting.
my TV.
That's interesting. I never realized that. I honestly thought that Lily was just making fun of him because they were kind of flirting and she was saying like, "Oh, don't get mixed in with him. You know what happened to his last wife?"
No, I could tell by the body language he was hooking up with her as his wife was dying, probably.
Ugh. So fucked up.
And the
Well,
production assistant too, or the makeup girl. I got that vibe there too.
Oh, really?
Because by this time I was mad at him.
You were just saying sleeping
Roy,
with
I'm
everyone.
like, you're just whoring around on set.
Roy, I want to see you go as Jack Dalroy for Halloween one year. I feel like you could pull
Man.
this off.
I need to grow my hair out a little bit more so I can do the crazy part.
But this is where we're gonna get a good bit of the climax here, which is when the demon reveals itself with a really crazy form where Lily's head splits open.
Right.
The demon's gonna massacre everybody. The assistant, Gus, gets his neck snapped. June gets her throat slit. And then Carmichael gets burnt, melted away.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, he gets like burned and then his ashes fly away.
He's all wax, no wick. Yeah.
Ha.
I did laugh my ass off that he tried to offer the demon the check that he's been flaunting all night.
I know.
And then it's gone, and then he uses abracadabra, which
Yeah.
supposedly was the magician's phrase based on that demon's name, which
Yep.
I can't remember or pronounce, so he's just abracadabra.
It's like Gab.
But there's it starts out similar,
Maybe like Gabbara or something.
but Lily actually says at the beginning
Yeah.
that it's like Abert, that his name was the basis for abracadabra. But can I just say, Kevin, she did not get her throat slit. She was decapitated by her own necklace, and I was sitting there getting ready for my day and stuff, and I put on earrings and I had a necklace that matched this shirt, and I set it back down.
Yeah,
Like, you're not getting
exactly.
me today.
Yep. Well, I like too that this is really where everything goes off the rails, but everything kind of led up to this. You know, we got the point where Mr. Regal showed himself through Lily. It's all just been building up to this point, so when it does happen, it's shocking, but at the same time, it's like, man, this is what I was waiting for, because you knew they were messing with this demon. Something bad was gonna happen.
And normally this would be the power of Christ compels you and demon go bye-bye. No, demon kills everyone.
Yeah, it really does. Super kills him.
There's also a really
Or
quick
how do you super
shot.
kill? Yeah.
Whenever you hang a woman by her necklace and burn a guy to a crisp and
All
break Gus's neck and have him fall
right.
through a table.
Oh, man. There's also a
You
really
haven't
quick
been killed. You've been super killed.
That's a
Yeah.
super kill if I've seen one.
I don't always super kill, but when I do, I break Gus's neck, decapitate a woman with a necklace, and burn a man to nothing. But
Abracadabra, bitch.
there needs to be a shirt with Late Night with the Devil with like Lily on it that just says abracadabra bitch.
That's why they needed to hire me as marketing
I
director.
know, missed opportunity. Maybe for the sequel that I hope we never get.
Oh God, it'd be like Joker 2, probably.
Yeah, no. What'd you say, Joker 2?
Yeah.
Probably. There's a very quick shot. Did you guys catch it when it starts to fade out and you get a real quick glimpse of the demon in the camera?
Like
You talking at
a
the end?
full-on demon?
Yeah, Lily,
Really?
when she kills everyone. Before it cuts to David or Jack and his like visions of what happened to him, if you stare close enough, it's a very like blink and you miss it. There is an outline of like a pale-faced devil creature on the screen.
In the static.
Yes.
Yeah, I did see
Yeah, I
that.
saw it in the static.
Yeah,
Yeah, very, very.
I thought you meant on set there was like a
Oh
big
no.
demon
When it
figure.
cuts away, when the TV's
Yes.
going dark, yeah.
Yeah, I did notice that.
Again,
Which for
great
a
jump
minute there
scare.
I thought was the end of the movie. I'm like, really? That's it? You're just gonna dump me like this?
Oh no, we gotta establish what happened with Jack and him going up to where he first met this demon creature. By the way, Roy, did you get a Halloween 3 vibe with Jack yelling, "Turn it off, turn it off, turn it off"?
No, I wasn't thinking of that, but that's a good catch. Stop it! Stop it!
Stop
Turn
it!
it off! Dude, what a
Don't look at the
classic.
screen. But yeah, so now we get Jack's backstory. Mom, you want to take the reins on this?
Well, I don't know. It's his backstory, but at the beginning you got his version. You got the public version of it, right? And now you're seeing what really happened, that he was part of the Tall Trees group, that he was chasing success, that 7 years afterwards, Minnie got lung cancer, and they're very careful to say that although she wasn't a smoker, she had lung cancer.
Yep.
And it sort of progresses, and then they do the actual scenes where they're doing this mystical type ceremony in the grove, and that's where, are you listening, Roy? That's
Listening.
where the skeleton comes back in. You
Really?
see the skeleton in that scene, and you know that the skeleton sitting there in costume in the auditorium there in the audience that would never talk to him was actually at the beginning of all this and was kind of there to monitor it. And that's where Minnie says, they took your soul.
So wait, was the skeleton in the grove?
He's one of the members of the grove, and he's there. They have been watching Jack the entire time. They've been monitoring
What?
him. So he was there to make sure that Jack got what was coming to him, that Jack didn't get out of line, that he didn't reveal secrets, whatever. He was there monitoring him, and they have been on him the whole time. And that's when you find out, because at the very beginning, a reporter said, what did you have to sacrifice to get to this point? It's real quick at the beginning.
Oh
And
yeah, I
this
do
is
remember
where
that.
you find out what he had to sacrifice. Exit Minnie, stage left, which is I love the Pink Panther reference. I almost said, she could have said Heavens to Murgatroyd. It could not have been more perfect.
Well, when he signs that deal too, the TV executive is like,
Yep.
this isn't your only sacrifice yet.
Right.
Yeah. And this
Man,
is
that's a
where
cool touch on the skeleton because whenever it cuts to that scene, I was always noticing the guy dressed as the owl because I know there's
Yep.
more owl symbolism as this goes on.
Right. And
Yep.
it's that same scene, and the skeleton is still just standing there, same costume, not saying a word, but he's there. I
Guess I have
did
to watch this
note.
the third time.
Oh, twist your arm. I did notice him standing in the group, in the grove. I just couldn't tell what his purpose was, so that makes a lot of sense. And this is where we realize that the entire time, this person that we've been kind of championing and rooting for is a total piece of shit.
Yep.
That he literally gave up his wife and her soul for success. But oops, be careful what you wish for, because that reveal that he has, you know, there's like a vision where he has to stab his wife because she says, I need you to do one more thing. This is also Roy, where I get the impression that the demon is
Yeah.
conjuring visions of her to manipulate him. But the wife says, I need one more thing. He stabs her, and oops, he has accidentally killed Lily in real life.
Yeah, but he had to stop the demon.
Yeah, I
But
mean,
I
I don't
don't
think
think
he
he
really
did,
was
though.
stopping the
No, I don't
demon.
think he did either. I think it flew
So
right out of her. Maybe into him.
at this point, I went down a rabbit hole because remember, his wife died 2 weeks after that final interview, and they made it sound like it was rather sudden. Not unexpected, but that she had gone downhill really fast.
He got her.
And I'm thinking, although they don't say it, and I doubt he did it stabbing because that would have started a whole new thing,
Could have done
but
it pillow to the face like
I
Silent Hill
think he
2.
put her out of her misery. And I still, Kevin and I kind of like, we went back and forth a little bit on this before. I don't think he gave them Lily's soul, Kevin. I really think he gave them his soul and they owned him and they, destroyed him because they could. I don't think he gave them Minnie's soul. I think he gave them his.
No,
But the
I think
sacrifice was her life. Roy, you have to settle this again.
no, I think that the visual of him stabbing his wife is her soul's the one that's gonna go, you know, with the demon. I think Jack is gonna take the fall and be arrested because we hear those police sirens. But I think the cancer that took his wife away was just the median or the means by which the demon can claim her soul.
Well, remember, ghosts are only ghosts because they have unfinished business. Every movie, every story you've ever been part of tells us that.
In
And
my opinion, I think that his wife was the living sacrifice. But yeah, it's like making a deal with the devil. You got to give something up, but he's going to take your soul in the end. So I think he gave his wife up. Maybe they didn't necessarily get her soul. but they definitely got Jack. Like, he made a deal that he can't get out of now.
I think that if the demon has the control to take your life, then at the end of that road is your soul is going to go with the demon. He might claim Jack's later, but for now, Jack's going to suffer the earthly fate of being arrested for massacring the whole talk show.
So you guys wouldn't sacrifice your spouse to get fame and success?
I'm the wrong one to ask that of. I'm just going to put that out
I
there. Kevin's like, oh man, he went there. She went there.
would just
I'm just gonna axe this conversation, and just keep on moving. No, I would not, Roy.
I wouldn't get married to begin with, so I think I'm in the clear.
Yeah,
You
can you not
psychopath.
sell your wife's soul, Kevin? I'd like some more grandchildren. Just putting that out there.
The closest thing you have to a grandchild from me is this podcast.
Happy
All right.
Mother's
Well,
Day.
yeah, I'll take it. I'll take it.
But that's, I mean, that, and then we cut to credits, and that's it for Late Night with the Devil. This movie's fucking great.
Okay, the credits though in themselves are amazing because I don't know where it comes up earlier in the movie, but there is a phrase, "It is done." And the credits roll and you've got the static and you've got the exit movie, and then all of a sudden the words, "It is done," are in the bottom left-hand corner of the screen. And I don't know if that was said in the beginning montage with the guy that was actually running the cult, but at some point, and it is done, like they have finished Jack off. And Minnie said, "They own you. They own your soul, and they will have you." So in the end, in his pursuit of everything, he lost everything. And then at the bottom, it said, "It is done." And I was like, thank God, I can't take any more of this movie, man. But that actually shows up.
Yeah.
I missed that too.
The other thing too is that once you've seen this movie once, this 90 minutes is so quick.
I know.
It did go very quickly. I did catch a couple mistakes. There wasn't, and my brain just works that way. So it wasn't perfect. There were a couple things, and see if you guys agree with me. Lily's face, when she transforms into Mr. Wriggles, she's got the weird eyes and the weird complexion and the blood coming out of her nose and the cut on her face and everything. And then when they go back to her creepy little girl just sitting there saying, "I think we should do it again, Dr. June," she's completely normal, fresh-faced little girl again. And all I could think was, well, in the Exorcist, her physical body started deteriorating, and here she's gone back to, but that made sense because they were trying to fake the audience out.
Yeah,
So
it did.
that was one mistake I caught. I thought she should have looked a little worse for wear. And then also, they built this on the premise that nobody knew about the nickname Minnie, that was just between them. But then that producer guy that was pushing so hard, the Roy character in the movie,
Yes.
he references Minnie at one point. And I thought that was supposed to be a secret nickname, which makes me wonder, was he also a tall tree dude? Was he in
Oh,
on it
that's a good
too?
point.
So
Yeah.
it was a big rabbit hole that I went down. But then, as the credits were rolling, and if you watch it on Shudder, they cut it way too quickly. You don't get to see the entire credits. Once "It Is Done" comes on, they are done also. There is a song playing that talk. It's Ed and Flo, and it talks about money. That all I want is the money. It's a weird song,
I did
but it's
notice that,
so
yeah.
cool. And "Fear the Warmth" or something like that. And then it was also sampled recently in a song called "Lemonade." And but the song is cool, but there's never any real chorus. It just repeats all the things, and it talks about but it talks it starts off with, it's all about the money, chasing the money and all of that stuff. But careful what you wish for. There's always a price to be paid for success. And I think that was the moral of the story here. And I think that they very cleverly referenced the movie Network quite a bit. They brought up the Bohemian Grove. They brought up, David Koresh, where the cult burnt down. The Exorcist references, the Johnny Carson references. It was just they did their research, man.
So I know the answer for me is straight up yes, and I have a feeling it'll be the same for you too, but do you recommend Late Night with the Devil for people to see it?
Me?
Both of you.
Yes, absolutely. This one is awesome. And did this get I guess it did get a rather wide theatrical release. It made $15 million, but
Probably about the
yet.
same scale as like Terrifier 2.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I would definitely recommend it for people to check out, especially because it's such a original idea. Like, I can't think of too many other horror movies that just take place during an entire episode of a talk show.
Yeah.
I think that alone sells it, and then just everything else that we discussed, the characters, the story, it all builds to this fantastic movie that's really, you're not going to forget anytime soon because it's so out there and just so well done that, yeah, I mean, I love this one. Enough said.
So
There
I'm
we
a big
go.
fan of watching movies in theaters. I guess I'm a dinosaur, but way back when I was a youngster, the only way you could see these movies was to go to a theater. And I feel that you get a different experience than you do when you're watching it on your TV at home. This morning, it worked in my favor because I didn't want that intense terror that I felt in the theater. But I think that this is one that would be enhanced by seeing it on a big screen in the dark. But I would
Yeah.
highly recommend this one. I thought it was original when it came out, which is why I asked Kevin to go see it. And I just, it was well done. I mean, well done. Kevin and I sat there in the dark in the theater, and I even told him, I said, this was so well done and so different. And yeah, I think all the stars, all of them.
Yeah. And I was worried revisiting this that maybe this would be almost like as much as I love these movies, I think they're more designed for a theater experience, almost exclusively the Quiet Place movies. I was a little worried that Late Night with the Devil would be a little less immersive. I still love the Quiet Place movies, but they're so much more enjoyable when you're watching it in a theater and you're focused on not making any noise like the characters are. I was a little nervous that this one would lose something watching it at home, following that amazing theatrical experience, and false. It was still perfect and terrifying watching it at night or day. And that's not something I can say very much, is that this one actually scared me.
Well, I think too, it is at the end of the day, it is an episode of a television show. So if you throw it on your TV, it's almost like that's how it was meant to be viewed.
Yeah,
True.
and I think it begs to be watched multiple times to pick up things like we did. So there we go. That's it
That is really
for.
cool. You guys got to see it in theaters. I'm kind of jealous.
Yeah, it was creepy. There was popcorn that went flying, I guarantee it. I'm
Yeah.
not good at jump scares. Things happen.
There you go. But that's Late Night with the Devil. Roy, you want to talk some, hit us with some horror news before we get out of here?
Oh my God, I totally forgot. Yes, I do. All right, horror news, Terrifier 4. So on Instagram, Damien Leone, he posted a picture of the Terrifier 4 script. He wrote, "This is the most horrifying, thrilling, emotional, and satisfying conclusion to the Terrifier saga." And as part of that, the fourth installment will reveal Art the Clown's origin story. So what do you guys think of
Ooh.
that?
Well, I know my mom's a big fan of the Terrifier film, so.
No, I've never seen a Terrifier movie. Just I'm gonna put that out there. But I have seen Damien, and
Nice.
I sat there watching Kevin talk to him, trying to figure out how such a good-looking man can come up with something so horrifyingly demented that people get sick in the theater, and it's just it doesn't match. His looks don't match the movies he puts out. But I am intrigued by
People say that
origin
about me in my
story
books.
for art, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll be I mean, no spoilers obviously, but I'm on the edge of my seat to see where the story goes after Terrifier 3, so
Yeah, because that left you on a cliffhanger and definitely set up for a sequel.
bring it on.
Yeah, I'm down. I don't think it's going to be the last one, though. These things make way too much money for this to be a solid conclusion.
I will say I will be excited for Damien to have a chance to work on something else that's not Terrifier.
Yeah, I'd like to see what else he can do.
Yeah, I want to see what else he can do. I know David is working on some other projects as well, so.
All right, next up, we got Frankenstein news. The movie by Guillermo del Toro has a release date of November 2025. This is actually releasing on Netflix. It's not going to be in theaters. Going straight to the streaming service. And it's shaping up to be a year of Frankenstein because Jake Gyllenhaal's sister, Maggie Gyllenhaal, is bringing us The Bride, which is focused on The Bride of Frankenstein. So we got a lot of Frankenstein news coming at us later this year. It's going to be actually this one's going to be released, I think, 2 or 3 weeks after The Bride. Then we'll get Guillermo del Toro's. Who's
Listen,
playing the
this
monster? Christian
Christian
Bale in the
Bale.
in the.
Oh, hell yes.
So he's playing that in The Bride, correct?
Yeah.
And then who's playing the monster for Guillermo del Toro?
Don't know, actually.
I remember I skimmed over the name when I was reading, but it didn't stick out like Christian Bale did for The Bride.
Wow.
I don't even remember who's starring in that Frankenstein one.
I don't know, but if they aren't as if it's not as good as the one in Young Frankenstein, I will be disappointed.
Yeah, no, The Bride is the actual title, written, directed, and produced by Maggie Gyllenhaal, starring Jesse Buckley, Christian Bale, Penelope Cruz, Peter Sarsgaard, and Annette Bening.
Ooh, a
Oh
Sarsgaard.
yeah.
I'm down.
No, not Sarsgaard.
Oh. All right.
He's the
Still
other cousin.
Swedish. Yeah.
And then I'm curious. I there's they've got a good name for the one that's going to Netflix. It is Oscar Isaac.
What's he
Okay.
done?
He's in the newer Star Wars movies. He was Poe.
Is he like the X-wing guy? The
Yeah.
pilot, like the ace pilot?
Yep. Yep.
Okay, nice.
Mia Goth is in here. Ralph
That's right.
Ineson. Christoph Waltz.
I still need to see Maxine. I've been meaning to watch that since it came out.
Yeah, I do as well.
Is
But I
that a
still need
horror
to see
movie?
Pearl as well,
Yes.
yeah. Yeah,
Was that a stupid question?
Right, up next, this is the last one we have. We have Matthew Lillard confirmed for Scream 7.
Yeah.
Kevin, I'm going to need your help with this one because this is the least franchise I'm familiar with, or the franchise I'm least familiar with. It's unclear if he is playing Stu Mocker. Is that how you say that?
Yep.
And he was one of the original Ghostface killers.
Spoiler
Lillard post.
alert.
Well, I mean, come on, how old's that movie?
Even I know that one.
Anyway, he posted on Instagram and he suggests that Stu is very much alive. And he also joins Scream 3's Scott Foley, who plays Roman Bridges.
Yep.
Yep, he was also killed. But they're both going to be in it, apparently. And people are wondering if it's going to take on like this meta thing, like the new Nightmare movie did, or what's going on. It's not really clear what all is going on with Ghostface.
I have my reservations about it, but I'll watch anything Scream related, and I will also watch anything Matthew Lillard related because that man is a godsend.
Can I just say that Matthew Lillard told me I was a badass?
Nice.
That's like one of my, I need that on my tombstone, Kevin.
Yeah, we have a t-shirt from, or a t-shirt. We have a photo from Horror Hound Roy where we did the photo op with Matthew Lillard and Skeet Ulrich.
I had broken toes, but
Nice.
I was not going to miss Horror Hound. And
That's dedication.
yeah, that's what he said.
My mom was right in between Matthew Lillard, who is tall as shit. I had no idea how tall he was. And in between him and Skeet, and they had like a fun interplay about my mom, and I'm just there like, yeah, I'm here too. Let's just take a
Yeah, it
picture.
was kind of like, and I didn't want the cane in the picture, so I like put it, came around the corner, and I put it there, and Skeet comes over and he like takes my hand, he helps me over, and they're holding me up, right? And you know, Skeet said, "Hey, what happened? You know, what are you okay?" And I said, "I've got broken toes, but I didn't want to miss the con." And Matthew goes, "'Cause she's a badass." And Kevin's on the
Nice.
other side going, "I'm here too, guys."
And Kevin.
It was a
Yeah.
very different,
I'm like, "Oh yeah, hey, that's my son."
It
Whatever.
was a very different photo op experience to when we did a photo op with Bruce Campbell,
Oh, yeah.
who was literally like nudging me left and right about stand here, no, here, no, here,
Yeah.
and then just strikes this beautiful chin pose.
I bet he was so fun.
He was awesome.
Groovy.
All right. Well, is that it for horror news?
That's it for horror news. That's all I could dig up.
All right, that's
I'm sure
plenty.
there's more
That's
out there,
plenty.
but you won't hear it here.
There you go. All right. Well,
Great
Mom,
tagline,
Mama
Roy.
Midnight, thanks for yeah.
If
Bringing you
news was
all the
honest,
news, but you won't hear it here. There you go.
you'll hear two to
This
three stories and
is
like it.
not the podcast for you. But Mom, thanks for coming back on.
Yeah, this was fun. I've been waiting. This movie just sort of like touched my, I'm not gonna say soul because we know how
Ha.
that turns out. But yeah, I was excited to come on. I was excited to finally meet the Roy.
Oh my goodness. I was excited to
And
finally meet Mom at midnight.
well,
We should
hopefully.
confirm that that nickname stemmed from Roy.
What?
Mama Midnight.
Oh, you started that, didn't you? Oh my
Wow.
gosh. So nobody calls me anything else now. Thanks.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I was just being a
So.
jackass like normal. And I was like, oh,
Yep.
we should call her Mom at midnight. Look
And you know
at
what? And now I got a cool nickname out of it. So
that.
jackass on, man.
Hey, that's one thing I've learned in my life.
Well, so
There.
thanks, guys. Appreciate it. And
Yeah.
I love the podcast. I love your guys' chemistry. I like your ideas, the creativity that flows. Cannot wait to see what you two come up with. I'm the biggest fan, always.
There we go. She's
Yeah.
saying that
Well,
only
thank
because
you.
we're only because it's being recorded.
I muted myself, sorry.
But thanks, Mom, for joining us. I always appreciate the support. And you know, anyone listening that knows the backstory of the show knows that this show would not be here without you. So thank you.
You're welcome. Always here to support you. You know that.
There we go. Well, Roy, you want to plug them socials and where people can pick up some R. Jacob Honeybrook writing before we get out of here?
Absolutely. I am a one-stop shop over on Instagram. You can find me there at author underscore Honeybrook. There you can find my link tree. And in that is links to all my books. They're all on Amazon, just 99 cents a piece. I also have a column, a weekly column, over on TBM Horror called R. Jacob's Honeycut. And if you want to check that out, I discuss things we talk about on here, the different movies. But then I also throw in some random stuff, maybe music, video games, different horror movies. So never know what you're going to get. So be sure you check out all those links. That is over on Instagram, author underscore Honeybrook.
Life is like an R. Jacob Honeybrook link. You never know what you're going
And it's all going to be terrible.
to get. No, it is not terrible. I've read your stuff, man. It
You've read
is
my
not.
stuff? Oh
Yes.
my goodness. Thank you.
Oh. I didn't
But,
just come on here just to, like to fluff your feathers, man. I mean, you know.
Fluff your fat. I
Well,
like that term. I'm gonna
I
use
don't know where that came from. I'm really into ducks lately. I don't know what's happening in my life.
Roy is
No
a
clue.
beautiful peacock waiting for those feathers to explode out. There you
My
go.
sister had this
Okay, so
giant
on.
peacock rug thing in her room. It was weird.
Peacocks are cool, but they're mean, man.
Kind of like those
Listen, I've
Canadian geese we have out here.
Listen, I've had weird run-ins with animals, so I'm not going anywhere near a peacock.
Oh, he's got great stories.
So, on that note, if you want to get in touch with the Midnight Terrors podcast, you can find us on Facebook under Midnight Terrors Podcast. You can shoot us an email at midnightterrorspodcast@gmail.com. If you want to check out our Linktree, you can find our Tee Public store on there if you want to pick up some merch. And you can also join our Facebook group where you can talk with us and all our friends and family, called Midnight Terrace Podcast on Facebook. So come talk to us. And
And if you're local and can, live events here in Charleston with the Midnight Terrors group. And maybe one of these days, Roy will come out and visit us and be a special guest.
maybe. I drove down to
Sell
North
out the
Carolina
joint.
last year, so just a
Yeah.
state away.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll be wall-to-wall packed if Roy shows up, so.
It will be. It will be.
The universe, I don't think, will be ready. There'll be some weird explosion in Charleston, South Carolina.
The lights will blow out like it did in the movie, and
Oh yeah.
we'll literally have late night with the devil with Roy as the guest.
Late night with Roy.
Gladly. Late
Yeah,
night
there we
with
go.
Roy.
Spin off. But that's it for the Midnight Terrors podcast, everybody. We love y'all. We'll see you again soon. Peace.